Hello and welcome to this week's Irish Wolves podcast.
My name is Tony Lawler.
We've been doing these podcasts now for the last couple of months, and today I'm going to interview the man who is partly responsible for the birth of these podcasts. He put up a comment a couple of months ago on a Facebook post of from the Wolf Whistle podcast, and it gave me the idea that there were a lot of stories out there from Irish Wolves supporters that would be worth listening to. So here we go with part one in a two-part interview. Today's guest is Peter Jones. Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm grand.
So, all good with you, yeah?
Yeah, all good. Just not long home and all of that, but busy. Like, just in spite of dungeon, fire and sword and the so-called pandemic, we're busy.
Yeah.
The property's busy, which is strange. And,
then
you hear of, you know, you hear of all the kind of Carphone warehouse and all these people closing, and the stuff coming through Dublin port is down, and the trade is, so it's, I don't know.
I'm talking to James lately. We have the odd committee meeting on Zoom and that, you know. James Kilcoyne over there in Balladreen. Yeah. He's saying he's busier than he ever was, you know.
Yeah. In fact, we've had one or two deals, actually, when he's up the other end of the county, but it just so happens, you know.
Yeah.
And fair play to him, he sent one in my direction when he would have takers much closer to him, you know. It was great. And we only made, funny enough, it was with his dad I had the first kind of deal.
Yeah.
And it was only one day he stepped in for the dad. I forget what the hell it was. And it's somehow, I don't know how we got to it, but Wolves came up. Like, I couldn't believe my ears, you know. Yeah. So he's a great lad.
Two in the same province.
Yeah, indeed. And when I, for years, thought I was the only one in Ireland.
Yeah. I think we all went through that phase, I think, all right, yeah. I was just thinking the other day about when people would laugh at you, you know. Wolves, how the hell?
Yeah.
You know, and I was saying, it just came into my mind when I was thinking about talking to you tonight, and I was saying, you know, in the last few years, people had nearly kind of pat you on the head when you come into the Premier League. Ah, Wolves, I kind of like them, all the United and Liverpool fans, you know. And then all of a sudden, in the last couple of years, they don't want to talk to you anymore because we're actually beating them, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, quite right. I often think of the fact of my kids, like when they were younger, and of course we all indoctrinate our kids, don't we?
Yeah.
And the boys were in school, and what team do you support, Man United, Liverpool? Wolves. Oh, where are they, or who are they, you know, kind of thing. And then after that match in the Kenny Miller match against United, Dave Jones season when we beat them, and the boys kind of went in with the chest pumped out and all the rest of it. You know who we are now.
It's good, alright. But to get the ball rolling, how did you become a Wolves fan? How did that great event happen?
I'll tell you how it happened. It was in the stars, really, because my auntie lived in Wolverhampton, my dad's sister.
Yeah.
In fact, she was the matron of the eye hospital there for years and years.
Oh.
And she lived in what's now the Compton Hospital.
Yeah.
Beautiful old house on 4.5 acres of manicured grounds and a lawn tennis. So we used to go there from 1959 until 1972, every year, every summer for 2 weeks.
Oh, lovely.
It was like living in the lap of luxury. And then I got, about 1964, I became aware of soccer. I saw the cup final between West Ham and Preston. It was the first cup final, the first soccer match I'd ever seen. West Ham beat Preston. But, and Alan Kelly actually was in goals for Preston.
For Preston,
that day.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and then the next summer, my dad and I, in Wolverhampton, decided we'd find out where is the ground. There is a team here, and they're called Wolves. And it's a fairly low-rise town, as we know, even today.
Yeah.
But in those days, what towered over the town were the four floodlit pylons. And we made our way there simply by using them as a guide and arrived. I don't know if older fans will remember the old Waterloo Road stand, but there was a big gateway in the middle of, near the main entrance.
Yeah.
And there was a wicked gate in the gate, and it was open. And the two of us pulled in, and all I remember is seeing the green, as you approach, just the green swarth, you know, and then going in. And I was just so bowled over by the neatness and the terraces, yeah, and seats everywhere, and everybody undercover.
Yeah.
Because in Roscommon, I can tell you, the only pitch, the only stadium in quotes I was ever at was the old stadium before Hyde Park that Roscommon used to play in, which was called St. Coleman's Park.
Yeah.
It was basically three green banks, and there was a kind of a concrete platforms on which they had railway sleepers. Now, that was, yeah, my experience of the stadium until I walked into Molyneux and saw, yeah, like, just the most, I absolutely love it for a sight. And the funny thing was, I didn't know what colours they played in, but I remember, and I was only 9 or 10, there was a guy cutting the grass. It was July. There was a guy cutting the grass and those big old mowers, the old ones, the petrol ones with the big roller at the back.
Yeah.
He had a nondescript tracksuit on him, but he had yellow and black hooped socks. He had the tracksuit tucked into them, and that was my first sight of the old gold.
Yeah.
And
could have been a player.
That was it. No, yeah, I know. No, he was cutting the grass. And I think Bill Pilbeam was his name.
Yeah.
And they showed us around and they were very nice to us. And, you know, just looking at the South Bank, my God, like, it just, yeah, seemed to soar up into the heavens.
Yeah.
So love at first sight. So from that day, and that's 55, 6 years ago, it's been my team.
Yeah.
And it's a religion. And you know the feeling as well. Even the sight now, when you roll up to Molyneux and you get the first glimpse, you, yeah, get that buzz, you know, yeah, and that hasn't ever changed. I still feel the same way every time I turn up.
Yeah.
And so, I think there's something very, I don't know, it's the old gold, it's the history, it's the rites and the cullises, the first floodlights, the old friendlies in the 50s. There's a magic about our club,
yeah,
that I think we all realise and very few know about, but there is something different about our club, I always think. So.
Yeah, and of course we'll talk a bit later on about the bad days in the early 80s, but what was the first game that you managed to get to?
Well, that was about 65 that I saw this pitch. We always used to go in July, which was a,
yeah,
bit of a bummer for me.
Wasn't good for the season. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So my dad went the following year on his own. He went in March. He's a doggy man. And he went to, there was a coursing meeting in a place called Alkar, the Waterloo Cup. It's a famous open coursing outside Liverpool. But he went down to Wolverhampton to visit his sister,
yep,
the matron, as we call her. And he went to a cup match, Wolves versus Sheffield United. And I told him it was on, and make sure you go. And he went. They, yeah, brought me back the program. But the funny thing was, what's interesting from that story, he said, I was never at a soccer match before in my life. But I came away from that match. He said, there was one player playing for Wolves. He was, quote, head and shoulders above everything else on the pitch. Number 10, Peter Knowle.
Yeah.
And the great Peter Knowles.
Yeah.
So he picked him out, you know, knowing nothing about the game.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. My first game was about 3 years later. I persuaded everybody to come in August. And it was Wolves v QPR, the 17th of August, 1968. They were just promoted from the second division. And I went on my own. I was 13.
Yeah.
And I went to the South Bank, would you believe? There's... bravery for you. I went in at the old the Molyneux Street side into the corner, which is the Steve Bull side.
Yeah.
And just stood looking across the South Bank. And Tony Lawler, I will never forget to my dying day, where a guy called Frank Wignall, who,
yeah,
played inside forward for us back in the day, he replaced that young lad, Alan Evans, who went off to Liverpool.
To Liverpool, yeah.
He was, yeah, most expensive teenager, I think.
Yeah.
Wignall put a ball in at the South Bank end, and I will never forget the roar. Like, just the whole place seemed to shake.
Yeah.
And for a 13-year-old from Roscommon who had seen maybe 1,000 to 1,500 people at a match, I nearly died with the,
yeah,
sound, you know, but I was hooked immediately. We won 3-1. The scorers were Wignall, Dugan and Mike Bailey.
Yeah.
The QPR had Rodney Marsh.
Yeah.
The Morgan twins, one of whom joined Spurs afterwards, Frank Sibley and a few more names I can remember, but it,
yeah,
was just the most memorable day. And, you never forget your first match like you never forget,
no,
your first love.
Yeah, yeah.
So
So, what would have been your? I probably know the answer or one of the answers to this question anyway. But who would have been your favorite players or player over the years?
All right, my very favorite player, and I had a few. Wagstaff,
yeah,
for me was just phenomenal. And our older listeners hopefully will know what I mean. He was the player that, on receipt of the ball on the left wing, the place you could actually feel the charge that came into the ground.
Yeah.
Because something was going to happen. And he had that ability to drop his shoulder and just the fullback went the other way. And it was just, he was magic. He was absolutely magic. There were games that David Wagstaff won on his own. Like it looked like he was playing the opposition on his own. So he was certainly my very favourite. But I loved all of that team. Richards playing off the Doug, fed by Waggy, Hibbert on the right side, Mike Bailey, just the most underrated player. He had that ability to carry a side and a band born to lead a side. So when he turned around at Wembley and showed the League Cup in 74, it was just so fitting because that man was born to lead a side. He led us up the steps that day. Very unlucky. In other games, the two semi-finals the year before that we lost, the UEFA Cup final that we lost, but nonetheless, they were a great side. And they, I suppose, still, even though we have the Ruben Neves and all of those wonderful players that we have now, but you know, that team was just, to me, was just special. And I always say, if we had a better, now Phil Parks is a lovely lad, we know him, but if we, like, Dugan had wanted Ronnie Allen to buy Gordon Banks when Leicester was selling Gordon Banks and Stoke bought. If we had bought Gordon Banks, and I think somebody instead of John McCall beside Frank Munro, maybe Colin Todd, who was available, I think we were two players short of winning the title.
Yeah.
With that side. So they're the kind of, they were the, at that time, they were the players that, you know, I related to and liked.
Just the one thing that when we started doing these podcasts, what got me thinking about them was a podcast that was put up on the Irish Wolves Facebook page, the Wolf Whistle podcast, and it was Graham Turner, and he was talking about it. And you actually put a comment up about a friendly in Dundalk, and that's what got me mind thinking of it. So what I wanted to ask you was, give me the background to that event.
All right. When I was staying in my auntie's, I found out that the then training ground, Castle Croft, was up the hill at the back. So I used to go up watching training.
Yeah.
And through being there every day and saying hello and making myself generally a nuisance around the place, I got to know Derek Dugan, who used to call me Pushkas, by the way, after the Hungarian player. Yeah. But I think he used to call everybody Pushkas somehow. And a few years later, he came to UCD when I was in UCD to open an all-weather pitch, and I reintroduced myself to him.
Yeah.
And we had a chat and all the rest, and that was fine. And a few years later, I had qualified at the time, and he came to Hodges Figgis to launch a book he had.
Bookshop, yeah.
And I went in, and we renewed our acquaintance, and he gave me his home phone number. So when the liquidation happened, the first one, I rang him because there was stories over here. Now, there wasn't a lot of news about it, but there was some suggestion that the place was going to be bulldozed and the club were going to fold. And I rang him and I said, is there any truth? He said, don't worry, we have this covered, he says.
Yeah.
And I've got a job. And I said, what job have you got? He said, guess. I said, the manager. No, he said, no. I'm the CEO, I'm the chairman, basically. So much delight about that. So he said to me, will you do me a favor? And I said, what? Would you organize a pre-season game in Ireland, Forest? Because I'd like to send the lads over. You know, we can't afford to send them too far.
Yeah.
So I rang a few clubs and I got talking to Enda McGill in Dundalk.
He was
the secretary in Dundalk at the time.
Yeah.
And Jimmy McLaughlin was the manager.
Yeah.
So lo and behold, we put it together. And at this stage, Dugan was calling me his international lawyer, by the way. But anyway, that's another story. So we organised the game. I met them at the airport when they flew in. We travelled up to Dundalk. Played Dundalk, just about, by the way, just scraped a 1-0 win. And they stayed in the Adelphi Hotel in Dundalk that night and went back the next day. So that was my, as it were, involvement in that in that arrangement. And then as a kind of reward, he kind of had us over for a weekend at the start of the new season. We had just been promoted into the league, into the first division.
Yeah.
And on an August weekend, we played Liverpool on the Saturday and Arsenal on the Monday.
Yeah.
Graham Hawkins and Jimmy Barron were manager and coach. And I bought a bottle of White Horse whiskey, don't ask me why, on the boat for Graham Hawkins. And so it ended up like with Joe Fagan on the Liverpool match on the Saturday, Joe Fagan and Ronnie Moran, Graham Hawkins, Jimmy Barron, myself and my missus in the boot room drinking the White Horse. And on the Monday, we played Arsenal and we had the same venue. We had Don Howe, Terry Neal was the manager, Don Howe, Graham, Jimmy, Barbara and Peter having the rest of the White Horse. So it was great. There were great times. And the funny bit, Tony, on the Monday, we were in one of those boxes in the old, in the Steve Bull stand with Derek Dugan as chairman, and he had a few guests as well. And it was a very hot day, and we were sitting out front, right up against the glass.
Yeah.
And Barbara fell asleep during the match.
That's a crime.
With the chairman sitting beside. It took me a long time to live that one down.
So, but you're still married anyway.
That was the story. What?
You're still married anyway, so that's a good sign.
And by the way, actually, now that I think of it, that was the weekend I proposed to her in the York Hotel in Wolverhampton, which is on the Tettenhall Road. Yeah, that's a fact. She said yes, unbelievably.
Yeah.
And a little funny yarn about that. The night we got engaged, there was an Indian restaurant underneath the hotel. And so we went for a meal because it was nearest to the hotel.
Yeah.
And a guy met us with a turban inside the door and showed us to our table and all the rest of it, and came back with the menus, had a look at those. Thank you very much. We were chatting away. And when he came back to take the order, he said to me, and I quote, "Kehi wilku." And I said, "What? Kehi wilku, an wilku gama." I said, "Where did you hear the Irish? I could see a guy in a turban talking."
Irish,
he said, "Frank the Bank comes in here every day for his lunch." So there was an AIB in town at the time, and a guy called Frank, I forget his surname, was the manager. And he was coming in every day teaching this Indian man Irish.
Good stuff.
So we had a laugh.
If he was a banker, he was probably getting paid to do it, you know?
He was, everybody funding him. Including you and me, though. That was that weekend. So that was how, with the through the Duke, I organised that game and done.
Yeah,
it was great.
And how much would you have known about the Batties and all that surrounding the takeover and that in the '80s?
Funny, we were in the inner sanctum, like the old boardroom up in the Waterloo Road stand before both games, and at about 1 minute to three on each day, these two people arrived and were spirited in. There was a little room just off the main boardroom, and these were the boys. And at the time, we were told, I know this is crazy now, we were told that they were members of the Saudi royal family.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Absolutely. Did you hear that story?
And
there was very little said. And I didn't have the temerity to ask Derek Dugan, is this true? What's the story here? Yeah, no, but there was no bad feeling. There was just relief that we actually survived. Was it 3 minutes to the deadline for the liquidator to accept the bid?
Yeah.
And that's all. We thought these guys were saviours in those days. And we were quite happy to see the club had actually survived. It was strange times.
Yeah, and how long did your stay in the inner circle last? Did you get a few more years out of it?
Actually, very soon afterwards. Well, there was a lot of the bad feeling arrived, the slippery slope arrived.
Yeah.
And Derry kind of was out, and that was the end. That was nearly as close to the... Well, that was as close to the club as I've been.
Yeah.
When Mick came along, I had a relationship with... You know, I got to know Mick, and I'll tell you a story about that maybe in a few minutes. But unfortunately, that was it. Once Derek was out, I was out. You know, they did come to Ireland. I forget who the manager was. They played at Loan, actually, and they played Bowes.
Yeah.
And I brought a couple of lads to at Loan from here.
Yeah.
And maybe Graham was still a manager. Yeah. I know Dennis Conyer was the physio because I knew Dennis, and we had a chat in at Loan. And we went into the meal. The meal was in the bar convent after. But anyway, but no, that the real upfront and being kind of in the inner circle, no, those days were gone.
Yeah, yeah. But just in general terms then, what would be the standout game, your favourite game? Maybe with the number of years you're supporting Wolves might give you two or three. But what game is sticking
with? A game I'll never forget was actually the following year after my first game. We played Man United in about the fifth game of the season at Molyneux. And we were top of the league. We'd won our first four games. And I went along. The place was rammed. Now, there was 55,000, I think, in the ground.
Yeah.
Best Law, Charlton. You know the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
We were missing Wagstaff. A young lad called Paul Walker played on the left wing.
Right.
It was a nil-all draw. But just for the sheer passion of it and... It was a pulsating match. Like there was action both ends up and down. And it just made such a, you know, it had such an effect on me. I just thought it was a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Like when Bess got the ball, it was like that thing about Wagstaff earlier. Just there was an electric current going around the place because he was just like, he was a great, there's no doubt. Yeah. He was one of the greats, Georgie. Yeah. But we held him 0-0. Ian Ewer was the centre back. United had just signed from Arsenal, big blonde lad from Scotland.
Yeah, Scottish guy, yeah.
Himself and Dugan had the most fantastic tussle all through the game. And one thing I must tell you, we were under severe pressure. They had a series of corners down at the South Bank end. And I was kind of around the halfway line, the old Molyneux Street stand. And it looked like we were going, like there was four or five in a row. And Dugan actually was standing in the centre circle, funny enough, with Ian Ewer, who hadn't gone forward for the corner.
Yeah.
And Dugan put his leg behind Ian Ewer and hit him a shoulder in the chest, and he went flying backwards. The crowd went up. The ref turned around and came up to book Dugan.
Yeah.
But it kind of lifted, do you know what I mean? It kind of lifted the sea.
Yeah.
And we kind of escaped that one, but that was a great match.
Yeah, Peter, certainly sounds like it was all right. Well, that's been an absolutely fascinating listen and great to chat to you. And we're going to continue this chat next week. So listen, I'll talk to you then. Okay, take care.
Cheers, Tony. Thanks yourself.
I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Join us again next week for some more interesting stories from fans and from former players. Until then, I wish you the best for the next week. And you can follow us on IrishWolves.org on our website or on Irish Wolves on Facebook. Thanks. See you next week.